This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. In the studio with my old friend Michael Fair, who's got a, well, let's call it a memoir. It's entitled Warning, the memoir. That's how I knew it was a memoir. Michael, welcome to The Other Side of the News.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
And I read through the book, and I found it very readable and very interesting, particularly to people who've been raised or have worked or done politics, community activists in Columbus and on the east side of this city. So in many ways, the book Fair Warning, the memoir, really touches on a lot of historical figures. And one of my favorites, of course, is Bill Moss, and we'll get to him a little later. But it really does kind of start in the beginning. And you weren't a native of Columbus, I found out from reading your book.
That's right. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. And I came here in 1963, '65, somewhere between there. And I've been here ever since.
And I learned when you first came here, you were mainly involved in balancing on one leg.
That story sounded painful. Oh, it was. I mean, it was early beginnings of my life. A lady that raised me some years ago, she had me stand on one leg for hours at a time. It has nothing to do with any racial overtones with this. It was just that the lady that raised me happened to be a white lady, and she was trying to understand that here's a young black kid that she couldn't really understand why he did certain things.
Well, I'm trying to figure out why she made you stand on one leg.
Oh, well, she made me stand on one leg because, being a young kid, I was acting like a young kid sometimes, but I didn't think that I needed to be standing on one leg for hours at a time in a room in the dark.
Well, you do that today, and they get you for child abuse.
Oh, that would be abuse. But, back in that time, I guess everything kind of, flowed at that time. So.
And from there, you mentioned you only knew one woman as a grandmother. Who was that?
Well, the grandmother was Mrs. Green's mother, and she, she was really a nice lady. She was just she could be a little mean at times. I mean, she could whoop your butt if you act up, you know what I mean? So Grandma was the enforcer when Mommy was away.
Well, so. I hope she wasn't one of them older women that like to get the switch out. I mean, there was a few of them.
Oh, there's a switch.
They'd go to a tree and find a
switch.
Oh,
my God. She would tell me to pick up a switch, and you know what I'd do? I'd find the smallest switch I could, and then she'd get mad at me because she'd say, go get me another one. So,
that looks like a 2x4.
No, I would never get anything bigger than the stick that I could find her, and that'd be the smallest one. So,
she was the mother of Mrs. the woman, Miss Green, who you began to regard as your mother.
Yeah, she was like my mother, but I wasn't an adopted son. I was just a foster son. So.
Okay, you write in your book that she saved you by rushing you to the hospital because you swallowed a quarter. But here's the part I don't understand. You said, the last time I flipped a quarter, I swallowed it. Were you trying to stop me?
No.
Were you like going, flipping it and trying to catch it?
No, Bob. What happened was
trying to impress some girl?
A young kid, I was playful. And everybody thought I was playing when I flipped this quarter up, right? And so when I flipped the quarter up, and it got in my mouth some kind of way, and I was choking. And everybody thought I was playing. But I had to tell you, Bob, I really was choking, like, almost to death. And that lady really saved my life. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Mrs. Green. I don't want to get emotional about it, but there wouldn't be no Mike Fair if it hadn't been for Mrs. Green.
So she acted quickly, decisively, sent you to the old children's hospital, and they cleared your throat, so to speak.
You know, and it's amazing how they did that, Bob, because even till this day, I can't even remember what happened, how they did it, how this was, you know, taken out of my throat. Nor has Mrs. Green ever talked about it.
Well, the other question is, when you were with Miss Green, how'd you get this route, being a paper boy with the Columbus Dispatch? Did they recruit you?
No. You know, I
kinda, did you volunteer?
I kind of volunteered for it because I was a entrepreneur even back in that time. You know, I tried to, you know, I would sell cookies at school, any kind of little odd jobs. I saw myself working towards that paper route. And one day when I had the opportunity to become a paper boy, it just seemed like it all skyrocketed from that point, you know. Even today, that's the reason why I'm an entrepreneur, because of, you know, taking on that paper out. It taught you how to make money, and I had
to show up on time. People expect their paper. Now, was it a morning or afternoon paper?
Well, I had the evening paper, and, you know, I had a big route. I had, like, maybe 400 customers. And even one of my greatest...
You had one of them bikes? Did you use a bike?
No. It was all on foot and a little red wagon.
Man, and I'm telling you, that is really old school. I thought you'd have one of those bikes with saddlebags.
No. I was old school. I had
like a Huffy.
No. It was all foot. You know, you got a little wagon and you just go at it, you know.
All right, and Mrs. Green's husband, Daddy Green, as you called him, said you got close to him, and
that was an emotional moment that I write about Dad, because, you know, I tried to keep with what I told him I was going to do about her when he passed, because he had told me that, you know, he was not going to be around very long. And that was an emotional day for him to tell me that. You know, I had to tell you, Bob, it still sticks with me today that, you know, a guy telling you that he's getting ready to leave here, and he raised you since 1963.
And that's a very sad moment in the book, but what's almost nearly as sad, he gave you his 56 car, and you didn't keep it. And now you're looking back on, Nellie, was that a precious gift from Daddy Green?
Don't put that out there, Bob.
I might be rich.
Don't put that out there.
What kind of car was it?
Well, it was a 1956 Oldsmobile.
Oh, man.
And today, you know.
Classic Oldsmobile.
A classic. And it was pink. And, you know, I had to tell you, I wish I still had that car today, because it definitely would be a collector's item. I just didn't know what I had.
Well, it looks like some of the men in your life, whether it's Daddy Green or Bill Moss, were prone to large luxury cars with very good taste.
Oh, definitely. You spoke of Bill Moss. He's got that little green, I want to say it's, what was it? Was that a Plymouth, or?
It was huge. What was that? I know. It was a big car, though. Because it was like.
That's all he ever had. And then he had the nerve to have a Fiari? What was that called? The little red car.
Oh, the Fiero.
Fiero, yeah. I was amazed for him, amazed that he would get in a little small car like that.
And Now, we know Daddy Green passed. Is Mama Green still alive?
Yeah, she passed. She passed back in 2005. And, you know, I write in there about, you know, a segment in there where
she was looking bad in the nursing home.
Them nursing homes,
like,
you got to be careful.
I don't know what they did to her. Someone should have went to jail.
Right. I mean, if you see the picture in my book, you would see that her face got banged up, and this is a lady that couldn't get up.
So she's your foster mother, but you said you're pretty much seeing her regularly well into the time she was in a nursing home. You stayed in close contact with her.
Well, I had to do that because Dad sort of gotten into my thoughts about her, you know, and I told him before he passed that I would look out for her, and I did exactly that.
And what about your brother? Tragic story, Greg Brown.
Well, he was my, he was like a foster brother, but we were raised like brothers. That was a tragic moment.
Were you both in the same household?
We were in the same household. He was older. And, you know, it still today, I think about him because here's a guy that tragically fell out of a window, and I found out he was pushed. And then, you know,
And why would someone want to, he's on a job site, why would somebody want to push him out a window?
Still to this day, the details of his death are still kind of, you know, scratchy.
Well, was there a large settlement in the case?
Yes, it was. Well, my sister, let me just back up. His sister, which is my adopted sister, she made a little money off of his death. I thought, you know, that was kind of crazy because, I mean...
Well, because a lot of times they sign confidentiality agreements and you never know what really happened. You can't really talk about it.
Right. Well, they shut her up. You know, the money, they shut her up. And this company that, where it happened, to me, I just felt like she sold out on that part to find out the truth about her brother.
And you've had other tragedies in your family as well. Michael Sterling Fair, what was his relationship to you?
He's my nephew.
And what happened to Michael Sterling Fair?
He was killed.
Who's named after you?
Yeah, he was
your namesake.
He was killed on the south side of Columbus. And I'll never forget that day because this young man had so much promise. He was going to school. He's going to Columbus State. He worked for me. He was an all-around
athlete. So he worked in your landscape business.
Oh, yeah. He worked mm-hmm. for me. And, you know, it was just a tragic moment in my life. And I never will forget that because, you know, I talked to him 24 hours before he was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really tough for me today because it's almost like it was a page ripped out of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I relive it every moment. Every time I hear his name, it does something to me.
And you found out about it by watching the news, or at least something happened?
Yeah, it was hard because, you know, when I saw it on the news, I thought it was someone else. But then, you know, sometimes as time went on, I said, wait a minute. I'm wondering, nah, that couldn't be his car. And then, you know, I saw his car there. And then I saw his body, you know, I didn't see him, but I saw a sheet. Now I was trying to connect the dots. And then finally when they said Mike Sterling Fair,
it was too much.
And understandably so. He worked with you. He was named after you. You knew him well. This is 98.3, 102.1. You're listening to WCRS, your community radio station, bringing you the other side of the news. But despite these tragedies, you were an activist, and you worked with, as you say, and I agree, some legendary activist figures, which in retrospect, reading your book, seems like you feel very privileged. You worked with the likes of Jerry Doyle and Bill Moss. As you put it in your book, you were standing up on the plantation with Jerry Doyle, who was one of my clients. So what do you remember about Jerry?
Oh, I met Jerry. He was picketing a nursing home.
On, was it Nelson Road?
Nelson Road.
And he had two signs.
He had two signs in
God
his hand.
God knows, and there's danger here.
Oh, Lord. And I didn't know what I was going into. And I just stopped to find out what was going on. And, Jerry, he'd give you an earful. I mean, you know, he was an amazing man that I respect. Because he stood up and he really opened up the door for other folks to, you know, stand up too. So I really respect him.
And he used to put out the plantation news?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, he was on one of my little business booklets called Fair Business and Community News some years ago, pointing at someone down at the Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I kind of gotten used to being around Jerry.
And he used to put himself in those prison striped outfits. And,
oh, my gosh.
And walk around, had a little ball and chain.
Oh, man. It puts me back in the days when I used to be a corrections officer. I said, wait a minute. You know, they don't even wear black and white anymore.
you worked in corrections?
I worked in corrections.
How was that?
Oh, that was amazing. It was like babysitting back in that day, you know, because I started in 1980. And I was out of there in 86, and I started my landscape business. But working at the OP, that was an amazing situation.
The old Ohio Penitentiary?
Yes, because I was only 23 years old then, and just being around some of these guys that were enough to be my dad, you know.
That place was practically medieval, though, wasn't
oh,
it?
Oh, my gosh. Bats flying through it and everything. And, you know, the people were, you know, just like folks on the street, you know, you deal with it.
So what are some other memories you have of Jerry Doyle?
Oh, Jerry. Oh, I remember him telling me about the Johnny Marzetti situation, mm-hmm. You know. And, you know, I had a lot of love for Jerry because here's a guy that had no lights at one time after losing his job and was barely able to even feed himself. That touched me. You know, that's why I supported him, you know, as much as I could, when I could.
Now, people like Jerry Doyle and Bill Moss both got some play in their life, some recognition, by either working for or being reported on by the legendary WVKO, which, for the listeners, I proudly will reiterate, for 10 years, I was the only white talk show host on an all-black radio station. And sadly, but occasionally comically, people would show up at VKO events to see Dr. Bob Tragus and Fight Back, and they'd come up and they clearly were surprised I was white.
What?
So we're looking for Dr. Bob's, like.
But you did a good job, Bob.
It was, you remember Fight Back?
Oh, yeah, Fight Back.
And that was Bill Moss's idea.
Bill Moss.
Bill Moss came up to me and said, certain things you can say as a white guy that I can't say. You're a PhD, you're white. If you say it's racist, you know, that if I say it, they're going to say I'm whining. You say it, they're going to say he's got a doctor, a degree. He knows what he's talking about.
Right, right.
Yeah,
right.
But what are your memories, even as a kid, preceding when I was working on VKO in the 90s? And then again, I worked on it when it was an Air America affiliate in 2008 and in 2012 when it was briefly white-owned, but couldn't sustain itself. But when you were a young kid, you talk about listening to some of these legendary VKO figures. What do you recall from that period?
Well, the first figure I ever met, like I said, was Bill Moss.
Because you were his paper boy.
And that's where it started. I mean, really.
So you knew the boss with the red hot sauce?
Definitely. I mean, Bill Moss, even at that time, he was young, and I met him over in a place called the Price Store around the corner. He'd have on his khakis.
Around the corner from Franklin where he lived?
Well, yes. And they had a little corner store. His in-laws had a corner store there, and he'd show up in there, and we'd talk. And then, you know, later on, being his paper boy, I'd go by the house and I'd talk to him. But then it led up to him, you know, running for state rep and running for mayor. And, you know, we kind of became, you know, real good friends over the years. And he just sort of grew on me. He was kind of like a father figure slash uncle, friend. Bill Moss was amazing man. I mean, he could sit down and talk to you just about anything and everything. And, you know, I really miss him dearly because he truly could sit down and, you know, man up with you.
Bill Moss, legendary figure in Columbus politics and on the music scene.
Oh,
when
definitely.
He died, entertainment Today called him, in Entertainment Weekly wrote about him as the Berry Gordy of Columbus, right? Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown, because of Capsole Records.
That was amazing.
Of that period when he
That was amazing because, you know,
did you ever listen to the Four Mints?
Yep, he told me about the Four Mints. He told me about the record company that he had started and
Capsole.
Some of the big names and. I was amazed. I mean, I remember him even giving me a record from the Four Mints.
Now, how come you didn't go down there and do a little crooning for him?
No, that wasn't for me. I'm not a cooner. I mean,
you do that kind of high falsetto.
No. I'll leave that to those other guys out there.
They can actually sing. I'm with you on that. I can't sing and
no,
I don't play instrument.
No.
But I know what I like. And
right.
I like Capsole music.
Right.
So, yeah, you knew him in that period.
Yes, sir. I mean.
And you heard him when he was DJ?
Oh, yeah. He was an amazing DJ, too. But I liked the activism that he had, you know, and that's what kind of got me involved with him more so.
Yeah, you've got a very interesting chapter in your memoir. I'm talking to Michael Fair and his book, Fair Warning. The legendary Bill Moss, which has a great picture of Bill and Ruth Moss and their three boys. It looks like Lauren and Daniel and Roger.
Right.
Bill Moss's three.
That was the early Mosses. But, you know, he has other children, too. So we need to let folks know that, you know, he had other children after that. That was just the early stages of, you know, his life when I first met him.
Including his daughter.
Right.
Now, you've got a 1980, remember Election Day 1980 when he's running for the Ohio House.
Oh, yeah.
Under the slogan, Unbought and Unbossed.
Definitely.
And also, interesting picture of the book where you're presenting him with a Fair Business and News Award.
Yes, sir.
What was the award for?
Well, you know, I thought that it would be great to just give him something from my business because here's a man that's always, you know, got out there and supported me and, you know, he got me sort of tuned in to people like VKO and others in the community, so I wanted to give something back.
Mm-hmm. And what were you honoring him for? Was there anything other than being Bill Moss?
Just being Bill Moss.
All right, and actually you knew another well-known Moss, not directly related, James Moss.
James Moss.
One of the founders of Police Officers for Equal Rights.
Yeah.
P-O-E-R, and in the 90s, it was really him that was pushing the Columbus Division of Police on the issue. Now we call it Black Lives Matter, but on police brutality and racism, excessive use of force.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, that was a real bad time.
You were looking for a beating. You thought you'd go with an organization that the police hated.
Right.
The white police.
Well, you know, what got me into that was that I was stopped by the police myself and made up to be someone that I wasn't. And that's how some, you know, officers do. They, you know, they have nothing else to do, and they go around trying to, you know, stir up little things like that. But what happened with mine was that we got stopped up on Hamilton Road, and we were pulled out of the car, and a guy went through my pockets, and to find out that I wasn't this guy they were looking for. I knew that already. He knew that. But they still wanted to, you know, make something happen out of nothing.
And you write about that in your book, and that incident with the police also involving your wife, was it not?
Right. Well, I remember and recall where the officer tried to harass my wife because she just asked him what happened with Michael, why they were dealing with me. And she was mistreated.
Now, one of the people you write about in your book I wasn't familiar with, Tyrone Spence and the Disco Express.
Oh, my gosh. That goes back to the disco days. Tyrone was a
up-and-coming. You were not there disco dancing, were you?
No, I was a DJ. Okay. Matter of fact, there was a guy named Mel Griffin that I used to be his little sidekick at East High School, and I'd get up and play once he was, you know, finished playing himself. And he would introduce me, and I'd get up and start playing a little music there. But, you know, Tyrone had this little disco, I wouldn't say, oh, Lord. It was sort of like he was trying to make something happen here in Columbus with the disco thing. And they just they tried to swallow him up by having stuff. And so it's an amazing thing that he kind of gotten by all that stuff. So it's.
Now, I found it interesting in the book that you were a boxer.
Yeah, that was back in the 70s.
Pacquiao or more Floyd Mayweather?
No,
What was your weight class?
147.
So you were a welder weight.
But I started out at 112, so.
Whoa, I don't even know what that is. Feather, bantam, something.
You couldn't find me. But anyway, I was only 112 at that time, like in the book there. And then, you know, later on I went to 147, so.
Well, in the last 2 minutes, I'd be remiss. Did you ever see James Buster Douglas back in those days?
Oh, yeah. He's a friend of mine. Really? I knew his dad, and his dad used to train us, so.
Bill Douglas was James's father?
Yeah, that was his father. And, I mean, Bill was an amazing man. He was a guy that could have been champ. It just didn't happen, but he was a champ in our eyes.
Now, we're coming up on the last minute here. How can people buy your memoir? Fair warning.
Well, they can either, you know, call me at 235-8740. I'm on Facebook, also Twitter. But, you know, the quickest way is just to call me. 235-8740.
Call Michael Fair, whether you need his book or a good landscaper. I can vouch for him. I've seen his work around the East Side.
I appreciate that, Bob.
Yeah. Make sure you get a hold of Michael Fair, but I think you'll enjoy the book. Just because it's got a whole lot of stuff about a lot of famous people in Columbus. But these are personal takes. They're vignettes where you talk about how these people, like Bill Moss and James Moss and Jerry Doyle, impacted your life.
Right. I appreciate that, Bob.
All right. Time to go. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.